What should we look at this evening?
Jen C.
Jen.
So I have been really, having a lovely time in many ways. And through some hard things, it feels hard, you know, however we talk about that, you know, hard, like the world pandemic, for example, is hard, that kind of hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the Zen story of, you know, where the thief comes to the monk's hut and to rob the monk, and the monk's not there, and discovers there's nothing to take. And as the thief is leaving, the monk returns, and the monk insists on the thief having his clothes because he's come all this way. Hmm. And then that place at the end of it where the thief leaves and the monk is sitting there looking up at this beautiful full moon and says, I wish I could give that fellow the moon. That's how I remember it anyway. And I just realized that that's one of the things that's been going on is that my sister's brother-in-law is dying. And he's 48 years old. He was diagnosed 2 weeks ago or something, and he's now in hospice care. Mm-hmm. And I just had that Zen story came up where I just felt like, oh, I wish I could give him the moon. And in that place of practicing with the very poignant and tender places that brings up in me and the reminder of how, what a passing show it all is. I'll stop there.
What a passing show it all is, and the tender and poignant place that brings you to, hearing about this fellow who's 48 years old and dying, and the Zen story about the monk in his hut wishing he could give the thief the moon dropped in. That you went to that place of, I wish I could give this person the moon.
Because I think that's one of the really big things that's happened for me during the pandemic is being so aware of how much I have in the sense of how much I've been given, how much, like kind of that place we talk about sometimes of how did I get lucky like this? How is it that I came across the information that it's possible to wake up.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would be really easy. Like I think the way that Zen story dropped in is kind of going to that place. I also have a very strong karmic place to want to be, well, like something like that happens and want to be like open hearted and just reach out and, you know, oh, I'll do anything to assist, and there's a big kind of all help kind of place, and so of course it's perfect. I've really been looking at that with this focus of the year long retreat right now, and that's where that Zen story dropped in. Is I think at base, it's just that. It's just a wow. I wish I could give him the moon.
Hmm.
You know,
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think just the last piece of it being that it's realizing that part of it is that it's okay. You know, because the other place I can go is, oh, gosh, it's like it's too late for him, right? I mean, not, that sounds horrible, but meaning like, you know, so that sort of karmic bent would be like, oh, gosh, well, what are the places that have really helped me to look at death and let go around that? And it's like, okay, this guy feels so horrible. He's throwing up all the time, all day. I mean, you know, you're not, in other words, I think it's kind of what we say. Like, we practice now because, you know, it could be really challenging to practice in much harder kind of at the end of our lives circumstances. But what I've seen in that is that's all profoundly okay. Like, there just aren't any mistakes in it, is the biggest place that I get to. That it's really all okay. It's somehow, yeah, somehow it's all okay.
Somehow it's all okay. There are no mistakes. And it sounds a lot like a lot being held in awareness, right? That awareness of how much you have that's been coming up a lot for you recently. How much you have in the sense of being given the realization that it's possible to wake up and end suffering in this lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And also noticing the karma to want to give, to want to offer this person something. And mm-hmm. and all of that being held in awareness, and in that process of nothing wrong, as you described it, it's all okay.
Yeah, exactly. That it just keeps, I just keep being reminded that the biggest gift any of us can give is to be right here, not in nothing wrong, just being exactly what life is living through each of us. And it feels like it somehow profoundly holds all of what is, as Sherry always says, you know, people are dying every day, you know, pandemic or no pandemic. People are suffering. People are, I mean, and it somehow it feels like to have the ability to be, to just practice with all of it is somehow just feels like a profound, profound gift that at least I feel like I've been given.
It feels like a profound gift you've been given. And that place that you recognize of the greatest gift you can give is to be here in nothing mm-hmm. wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So feeling grateful, kind of that place of heart broken open a little bit, that place. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Heart broken open. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thanks, Anna.
Thank you.
And this is Rebecca.
Rebecca.
Yes, I'm feeling a lot of that heart opening too. And it does seem for me to be centered around the challenging circumstances and the pandemic and all of that kind of thing. And it is a stark contrast to see what I, and I mean that in a karmic sense, would like to be, quote, doing and, you know, being engaged with and, you know, at least being able to fool myself into thinking that I'm impacting things and, you know, that karmic drive. And then to the contrast between that karmic tendency, and to just be in a place where none of that is supported. None of that is, it's just not possible. I mean, it is really not possible to live in that delusion in the situation that we're in, not only in the monastery, but even in this situation with the pandemic, I project.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So seeing that karmic drive to want to do, to want to create that illusion that I is having some sort of impact. And mm-hmm. you realize that in the circumstances that you're in, that is not supported at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the great opportunity that I'm finding in these circumstances of staying put and not, you know, just being out of our ordinary circumstance, is that it is, I don't know what to attribute this to, but I feel like I'm just getting a good look at the mind, at how conditioned mind operates. It is really what Sherry and Ashwini talked about around looking at conditioning instead of looking through it, that it feels like there's a way that is much more available for me in the current circumstances.
Mm-hmm. That the looking at conditioned mind instead of through it is much more available to you in the current circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what I'm seeing is that it is. I mean, it really is sort of. Well, to use the image of liking watching an alcoholic in detox, you know, it just sort of paces and spins and wants to, you know, reach for these things and just is very, can be very, well, just the spectrum of things, you know, it can be very morose and sad and gloomy, or it can be very, well, there's all kinds of things. Everything that a mind can be. That's sort of what I've been experiencing. And yet, being that which is step back and watching that, and not, at least not a lot of the time, not taking it personally, not taking it as real, has been a remarkable experience. And you know, it's what we're practicing all the time, you know, but I'm just, I think I'm just, I don't know, just the, it's just clearer, I think, lately.
Mm-hmm. It's clearer. It's that receiving, right, that we were talking about with Jen, receiving the gifts. And it's clearer and it's remarkable. It sounds like a powerful experience of disidentification, huh, to be able to see the mind of the alcoholic that is in detox and is pacing and spinning and getting gloomy and morose, and to realize that what you are is what is seeing that.
Yes, it is. It's exactly a powerful experience of disidentification. And, you know, in fact, just last night, I did something, a big wave of karma hit. And I picked up the recorder, had the wherewithal to pick up the recorder and let the right hand talk. And it was just, you know, it was just, oh, you know, just rich in all kinds of karmic emotion and you know, tears and anger and all of these kinds of things. And then it was time to go do something. So I just shelved it. Didn't even have time to get to the left hand at that moment. But I did the thing that it was time to do, and then went back. So I was happened to be standing in front of this gorgeous oak tree when I listened back to the right hand, and was just able to, I don't know how to describe it, but it was like I could say, gorgeous oak tree, do you feel these things, you know, and could sort of reflect even without engaging with the identity directly, the right hand ego personality directly, but just in that way, it felt like it was bringing so much. It was compassionate, it was light, it was disidentified, and it was available. That was the most that was the most striking thing, is how available that whole place was.
I'm so struck by how available that whole place was, that place that was compassionate and light and disidentified, that so you made that right-hand recording with the tears, the emotion, and when you listened to it, you were standing in front of an oak tree, and it occurred to you to ask, oak tree, do you experience all of this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what did the oak tree respond?
You know, it was actually in beautiful peace and silence and just sort of a smile. Because you know what the difference was? You know, I really got it then, and it's coming back up again now, is the difference is that oak tree was real. It was really here. It was real in this moment, you know? And all of that other stuff that had gone on wasn't. And so by bringing that oak tree into my two-handed recording exercise and really, I don't know how to describe it. It was just really, it just felt really present. And I don't know, kind of mixed up those wonderful tools that we use, the two-handed, the interviewing, the, you know, the things around us and just, you know, all of that in a way that felt like, oh gosh, saved me from a lot of histrionic karmic brouhaha for that evening.
So that oak tree that was just silent and smiling brought you to the realization that the oak tree was real and here, mm-hmm. and all of those histrionics were not. It sounds like the oak tree was the mirror of mm-hmm. what's real, that you got to see what's not real in that mirror mm-hmm. of.
Exactly.
A clumsy word, but.
Mm-hmm. No, it's exactly it. That is exactly it, yeah. Yeah, so yeah, so good. And just like what was said earlier, just so grateful to have come across in this lifetime and accepted and taken on and practiced the tools that make that kind of mirroring available.
Mm. Yeah, mm-hmm. grateful for the tools that make that kind of mirroring available.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Anna.
Thank you.
This is Scott.
This is Renee. Michael.
I heard Scott, Renee, Michael. So Scott.
Well, kind of where we started about the heart opening, I was just watching my heart open in the process of group. I mean, just, gosh, talk about gratitude. I mean, the practitioner practicing, the practitioner speaking on the call, the facilitator mirroring the authenticity, the practitioner practicing, the practitioner speaking, sharing, the facilitator mirroring the authenticity. It's just like, wow, what a beautiful exchange. What a beautiful exchange. And I could feel my whole body relaxing, just I guess probably coming to presence and listening, you know, getting in rhythm with that exchange internally.
Mm-hmm. Getting in rhythm with that exchange internally as you listen to all these mirrors, the authenticity being mirrored and all these exchanges.
Yeah, and kind of walking that back, saying, oh, that's what goes on in the two-handed recording. You know, the person gets on there and talks from their experience, and they get listened to, and they get reflected and guided. And it's just back and forth. I guess it's that whittling away, that process of waking up, that process of the heart opening.
That process of the heart opening, the whittling away, the back and forth, the right hand gets shogun centered about whatever's going on with them, and then the left hand reflects that and hears that.
And what I've been watching lately, it's been kind of an interesting response from the mentor. The right hand talks, and there's listening, and like there's a listening from kind of a broad place. There's compassion, but like a real seeing. And then the mentor basically gets on and says, that's not you. That's not you. What you're hearing is not you. What's being created as, quote, your life, that's not you. And just being really direct about that. And then I've been noticing it kind of translating to my life as I go about. I was walking through the kitchen the other day, and I heard this. I could feel it's a posture, you know, it's an identification. I didn't know that at the time, but it was something just like, oh, I hate this, you know, just negativity. And then I dropped in, that's not you. And that's like a wow, when it really feels like you, it's your body, for goodness sake. You're in a particular posture, you're saying these words. But when it was said to me, that's not you, it was like, wham, you know, just like knocked the identification right out or something, where I could feel everything just straighten up and wake up in such a quick moment. It was kind of astonishing.
Kind of astonishing to experience that wham, that directness of the mentor, this time not coming from a left-handed recording, but just dropping in. There you were available to it from that training, right? That there you were walking across the kitchen with this posture, what you realized, not at the time, but when the mentor offered the wham, was this posture of identification, hearing this voice saying, I hate this. And, you know, it felt like you, of course it does. There's this voice calling itself I,
right,
saying, talking about it, an experience, and there you were identifying with that experience. And then came the wham, there's that straightening up, waking up.
Yeah.
It's not you.
Yeah, and it's interesting, the more I look at it and I'm hearing that reflection back, and now it's almost like the awareness is tracking for that, looking for that. So like when I have interactions with other people, they're often conditioned interactions, and I tend to be in familiar patterns. And just that place of like judging and being judged, it's almost like it's picking up more and more. That's not you. The judging of them is not you, and the being judged is not you. And there's just such a clarity from the mentor on that, and it keeps stunning the identity. Like, it's like shaking their head, like, what? They're like, not clear what's going on, disorienting to the identity. But it's super fun for the awareness.
Super fun for the awareness, and then that experience also of disorienting and stunning when you're in those interactions with, quote, external people. And aware of the judgment view of them and hearing that sharp, direct, that's not you.
And so what's been happening is sometimes I just stop talking because I become aware whoever's talking isn't me. And so sometimes I'll just stop talking in kind of almost mid-sentence, and I'll just take a breath. And it feels a little awkward right now. But I was just saying, well, that's okay. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to recover perfectly or explain what's going on. It feels kind of beautiful, actually, just to stop talking when I'm aware that it's not me that's talking. And then I think that maybe the next step I'm seeing is just to stay there and let life keep informing. It's not like another identity needs to come in and pick up the conversation that life could actually speak through. Life can and does speak through Scott.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, life can and does speak through Scott. And sounds like training with the pause, right? When you're in these real interaction situations and in comes the sharp, direct wham of that's not you, using that as a cue to pause, breathe, doesn't matter if it feels awkward, don't have to give attention back to that judgment process, right?
Right.
In that moment, to pause and breathe, and you're seeing now that also the training possibility of not needing to go back into, to give attention back to conditioned mind to then pick up during the conversation that life can speak.
Yeah, and I was seeing in that process just having the courage to kind of stay there because there's such a karmic push to, oh my God, like recover, recover, recover. And then it's like, no, that's not me. And the recover is not me either. And it's almost like there is no such thing as courage. No courage is needed. Like when you're in that place, it's delightful. There's a ton of energy and momentum and support. So it's funny to call it courage because it doesn't actually take courage. It's just everything is there doing what it does.
Mm-hmm. Everything is there just doing what it does. It sounds like getting to have your own experience of what it's like to pause and breathe and get here in a real life interaction with another person, that there's this story that it takes courage, and you realize that, well, when you look to your experience, it's actually delightful and full of energy.
Yes. Thank you, Anna.
Thank you. Renee.
Hi, Anna. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you.
Okay. I just want to express also everyone talking about the gratitude and of what we've been given. There's one of my favorite songs. I start crying every time I hear that phrase. From the song, that just so grateful for everything I've been given, and love to hear that when people talk about that. I feel the same way. So I had a really good experience today. I've been practicing a lot and with recording and listening with the two-handed recording, and I'm doing it with when times are good in terms of content in my life, not the pandemic, of course, but the but work has been good, and I'm just continuing to do the same process mapping, whatever's going on at the time, I'm doing the process mapping with that. And so I was recording with the one who is constantly evaluated, where ego is constantly evaluating her. And I had a really amazing mentor recording that I was listening to, and I watched conditioning start up after that, starting to plan what I was going to do with my life now that I was aware.
Hmm. That sounds like a good catch, huh? But there you were, receiving that mentoring recording. It sounds like really landed for you. And then, like we were talking about with Rebecca, right? You got to see conditioned mind rather than see through it, see it, start planning your life, what you were going to do. Now you were aware.
Yeah, and at first I didn't catch it, but it was pretty quick. Like, it was like, you know, what, and it was just, it started going through all the things I could do, which it's done so many times. And it was just amazing to see it starting to siphon the energy and take back over the awareness, I guess. I don't know how to say that, but take it over and take me back over. And then take it back, you know, like I was like, wait a minute, that's ego again, you know, and then I could just be an awareness of that and then just be centered. And then I started to see the trees and the sky and everything. And, I just don't think I've seen it. Most of the time, when I get centered, it's because it feels like I'm in a suffering, you know, quote, suffering process, a more severe suffering process, I guess, is the way to say it. But this was really, really quite insightful. I mean, it was just a huge insight.
A huge insight. And if I'm tracking, what you're seeing is that usually that kind of awareness comes when you get here from a place of more intense suffering. And it's what you started off talking about, right? That you're training to do those process maps and do those two-handed recording and listenings, whatever's going on, right? And it's that whatever's going on training, right, that's now kicking in. You're seeing that there you were listening to that mentoring recording, and you got to watch that whole process of conditioned mind attempt to take it over from awareness.
And it was, you know, I don't know, I mean, everybody here I think has experienced this, but it was just so and so what came all day, this happened this morning, and all day I've just been similar to the words used previously about that's not you, or that's ego again, or and just being here. And so that there's this, the karma that I see a lot is that constant evaluation of, you know, you have to do something to be valuable. You have to be seen to be valuable. And when that goes away, like when there isn't any requirement to be valuable, then there's this impulse to do something again. And then when that's dropped, then when that next impulse comes in to do something, then there's everything's just all right there. Like everything is just fine. Like there's nothing to do and it's all perfect.
If I'm tracking, it's like sort of seeing the layers. That image that we've been hearing recently, the layers of the Grand Canyon, right? So there you are training with this, this suffering process of being evaluated, right? And so you mm-hmm. recognize those aspects of that suffering process of needing to do to be valuable. And when something drops in to do and you see it and catch it, you see it as that impulse to do in order to be valuable. So I was checking that, right? And then you see that impulse come in and you see it and you realize it's completely okay that that impulse came up.
Yeah, it's okay if that impulse came up, and it's okay not to do anything. Like, I'm okay not to do anything. You know, where ego is saying I'm not okay if I don't do anything.
So it sounds like a direct experience of your goodness is already established, right? That not only is it okay that impulse comes in to do something in order to be valuable, it's also okay not to do that thing, right? That your goodness has nothing to do with that conditional process.
Right. It reminds me, like, I can remember very vague, like, not clear memory, but I can remember being a little girl and not having to have all that, you know, just. I didn't have to do anything to be valuable. I didn't really think about it, you know. I was just a being running around, whatever. And it sort of feels like that.
Mm-hmm. Sort of feels like that remembering being a young child and not even having the idea of being valuable or not, just being, running around, being.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Michael.
Hi, Anna. So I'm also really grateful to be here and grateful for these practice opportunities. And it's so funny. What I was going to say just went completely out of my mind. It's like a big blank space. Just... opened up in front of me. That's kind of fun. And that reminds me of people, you know, practicing calling into the morning show or the year-long retreat and, well, open air also, and not knowing what they're going to say and surviving that experience, much to ego's consternation.
And getting to have your own experience of it now, huh? That here you are. whatever it was that you were going to say goes away, and this blank open space opens up.
Yes. And then it did. It's funny, in that place of relaxation and not taking it so seriously, you know, what I was considering sharing, you know, is available again. And that is that I'm so grateful for practice, because it feels like it gives me a window into the human mind. And the importance of that to me is that it's not just my mind, because then there's no reference point, and conditioning to me has the upper hand. And yet when I can hear from dozens, hundreds, thousands of people over time about how their mind works, then I can see that how theirs works is no different than mine. And so there's no real problem, nothing to fix.
There's no real problem, nothing to fix. When you get to realize and hear that minds are the same, that they all work in the same way, and whatever's going on in the mind that you're watching is not a problem and doesn't have to be taken personally.
Yes, exactly. And in the, you know, in the day-to-day world, in my normal interactions with people, people generally don't reveal how their mind works. So I don't have a, you know, without practice, it's hard for me to get a direct experience of what's going on with other people, and through that get a sense of what's going on with me. And to me, the beauty of practice is that it's like a clear window. It's a clear window into the mind, how the mind works when it's identified, when it's not identified. And it, to me, it reminds me of that quote about be kind to everyone you meet because everyone is fighting a hard battle. And when I have evidence of that hard battle within myself and hearing other people talk, it's easy for me to project that onto other people out in the world, whether they say anything to me or share anything with me or not. To me, it feels like there's an automatic compassion that develops as a result of practice.
There's an automatic compassion that develops as a result of practice and from tracking. So in all sorts of practice forums, groups, and open air, we get to hear people reveal what's going on in the mind. We get that clear window onto what the mind gets up to. And it takes you to that place of be kind to everyone you meet because everyone is fighting a really hard battle. So when you're out in the world and not in a formal practice setting, that window is available to you, even though the person might not be revealing what's going on in their mind. You go to that place of compassion because, of course, it's universal that everybody's fighting that hard battle. Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And which reminds me of another thing that I dropped in earlier, and that is the brilliance of the facilitation and the facilitators, from the guide to everyone else at the monastery and facilitating workshops. And it provides such a clear mirror for me, and I project for others. That again, the because there's no agenda there, it feels like it clarifies that whole process of looking at the mind and what the mind is. Because from a conditioned perspective, there's an agenda of every kind imaginable, right? From fixing it to, you know, something wrong, and but to be able to provide a clarity through the very skillful facilitation and the kindness of that really helps me to sidestep conditioning to be able to even look at this stuff in the first place.
Mm-hmm. It helps you sidestep conditioning to be even able to look at this stuff in the first place, to be in to be facilitated. And it reminds me of the oak tree, right? That there's that mirror of authenticity, that mirror of the mirror that doesn't have an agenda, right, that you project and go to that place of, that allows you to see whatever the mind may be doing from nothing wrong.
Yes, yes. And I was glad to hear about the oak tree because I had done that workshop also about interviewing so-called inanimate objects. And I haven't done any of that since the workshop. And so I'm glad to be reminded of that and can add that to my toolbox.
Yeah, you can add that to your toolbox to interview something around you, see what happens.
Yeah. Thank you, Anna.
Thank you. Bill? Phil.
Joyce.
Phil and then Joyce.
Wow, I was just, during that conversation, I was just thinking, or it just came to me how, speak of giving. I mean, the juxtaposition of, you know, how we speak to each other in this privileged environment about what's going on with us, and how we learn so much, like we were talking about earlier, so much from each other. I mean, you don't get that anywhere else. And I look at some people, you know, people like I'm really close to, well, close to, I don't know about really, but, you know, that are in my life. And it's like, there's no, that kind of giving is just not there. It's just not available for them, it seems like, to give, nor in some ways me to give to them, because it's just not on that level. It's not on that plane the way we, you know, talk in group with each other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So sounds like realizing the quality, the experience of giving in the privileged environment, where I was tracking what you were saying, we show up with that generosity and openness, and in that learn so much from each other.
Yeah, I mean, there's nobody anywhere that in my environment that talks the way we talk about what's going on with us in such detail, and knowing it's not the story, you know, that it's that's not the essence of anything, let alone who we are or even what's going on, that it's the way, you know, all the intricacies, I can't say that, of how we are approaching it that is so elegant or so big, you know?
So elegant, so big, the way we approach what's going on with us and show up to talk about it with,
yeah,
that level,
exactly,
of attention.
Yeah, and that is really giving deeply of who we are, because it's, you know, I was looking at this notion. I was like, now what? Now, just really, what is giving of yourself wholeheartedly to something? And what I saw is that it really isn't even a giving of yourself wholeheartedly. It's giving life wholeheartedly. And that's, in a sense, what it seems like we you know, are. That's the way we interact, is giving life to each other. And hopefully, in some ways, that can, you know, translate into, at least from a point of view of, from you know, this piece of life into the world, that that I become, you know, that there's the ability to do that, and not even to just, there is no me to be given, you know, it's all life, and life just does it if I can get out of the way.
That there is no me, life just gives. Yeah, it's not giving of yourself, it's life giving life to life.
Exactly. That's how I saw it. Life giving life to life, and you know, when it's received, it's you just feel that whole kind of interconnectedness, you know, that whole yeah, the interconnectedness, the unity, the oneness. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So anyhow, but just that whole being able to see, you know, listen to us and see how we give so much to each other without even realizing it, basically, because that's just who we are now. We practice, and it's huge.
That giving is huge. It's how we are, how we practice, and it takes you to that experience of interconnectedness and unity and oneness.
Yeah, because we're all, you know, we're, and it can be that way anywhere. Life giving to life, giving, receive, life receiving, life giving. It's just back and forth. So I'm just so grateful, you know, for the practice, for the, you know, for Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. I mean, gosh, what, they are three jewels we've been given. So it's just so generous of life to have given us those, and that the life within us can receive those.
Mm. how generous of life that it's given us those, and that the life can so generously receive those. Sounds like being present to just how sparkly those three jewels are, right? The body, sangha.
Sparkly jewels, yeah. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Joyce.
And then Pasha.
And then Pasha. Joyce.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Anna. excuse me. Earlier this week, as I my meditation was ending, something, an awareness dropped in that the life that I had lived as a child, well, it's the words that I have now for it. It was like that life was lived by conditioning because there was so much suffering, and that that I could just let go of that place of suffering.
Mm-hmm. So the realization that you could just let go of that place of suffering, and what was that like to experience?
It was pretty empty. I thought, wow, this is a revelation here. It seemed valid, and yet it seemed that there was not, that I hadn't lived that lifetime. And sitting with that the rest of this week, I've been in a real place of peace. And I know it must be conditioning coming in. Well, I know it's conditioning, it's saying, but what about the child that was so unhappy? And then I just sit with that in a way, kind of in compassion. And I'm at a place of total awe of what that could mean, and yet I keep feeling conditioning just trying to get its little claws in there and make it something else. And there's the peace and the not peace, and that's where I am. I'm not sure what to do with this.
Did you say, I'm not sure what to do with this?
Yes. And
did I hear that?
Yes, go ahead.
Uh-huh. I don't know if you've heard that response from... sounds like somebody might have unmuted. If you could just double check that you're muted, if you're not, Joyce. I don't know if you've heard that response from the guide, when people describe an experience of really being brought to presence, and as you say, peace and compassion. And here you are in peace, and the question that ego throws in is, well, what do I do? What do I do about it? Right? That it's so classic for ego. It's like Renee was talking about, right? That here we are in presence, and conditioned mind attempts to turn that process of presence and awareness into a content. Well, what do I do with my life now? Am I aware? What do I do?
Wow. Yeah. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you okay, Joyce. You're a little bit muffled, quiet. If maybe there's any way you could speak up or get closer to the phone or microphone. We could see if that might
help. I picked the phone up. I have it in my hand.
Ah, that's much better. Great.
Thank you. Yes, what you said about what Renee said, that resonates, and in you know, that's the thing that just keeps coming up. But what do I do? And it comes up in different languages than that, and it seems that the doing would be not doing, just sitting with it.
Mm-hmm. So what occurs to you is that the doing would be not doing, just sitting with it.
There's so much openness and awareness and non-judgment and I think what seems to go along with that is conditioning trying to become the duality that it's always done. And there's no place for that. And yet, it's an I don't know.
What was that last piece, Joyce? Could you repeat that?
It
went quiet.
It's just become an I don't know. Which also, if it's an I don't know, it seems like it's, again, just more of conditioning.
Yeah, well, we don't know, huh? to stay and don't know. But it sounds like describing this place of awareness and openness and non-judgment. And like we were talking about earlier on the call, seeing conditioned mind rather than seeing through it, right? Seeing its attempts to bring in dualities and doing and as it will, as it does.
Could you repeat that, please?
Yeah. So you're describing this place of openness, awareness, and non-judgment. And like we were talking about earlier on the call, getting to practice looking at conditioned mind rather than looking through it. So seeing it come in with its dualities and doing as it will, as it does.
Looking at conditioned mind instead of through it. Well, yes. And knowing that openness and peace of mind is certainly not conditioning.
So recognizing that openness and peace of mind are qualities of presence, of here, of not having attention on conditioned mind.
This brings up a sense of the only word I can think of is excitement, that that I haven't really felt in a long time. And thank you, and thank you, Sangha, because as the last person was saying, that, you know, we all do this together, and well, it's the little bits and pieces that I hear from other people along with the things that just fall in or come into awareness that that's where I'm going. That's who I am, I guess. I'm not even sure. Some of the words don't seem to make sense anymore because it feels almost new.
It feels almost new. You're experiencing an excitement and gratitude for being able to come together as Sangha and for all of the ways that you see yourself in these mirrors and realizing that we can't do it alone.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Pasha.
Pasha.
Hi. I'll be brief. I know we're close to the end of the call, and I'm deeply grateful for practice and this opportunity to be with Sangha and listening. Everyone is talking. I feel like I'm resonating with every caller.
Resonating with every caller.
Yeah. And I had this experience last weekend. Over the long weekend, having the opportunity of to practice in a silent at-home retreat for 4 days. It brought me back to the monastery as I was on a visiting monk program.
So that experience of retreat, the experience of being at the monastery and the visiting monk.
Yeah, your sound is slightly breaking out for me.
It's breaking up. How is it now?
Now it's good.
Okay. Okay, good.
Yeah. And I went on that retreat thinking, well, or, you know, listening to the voices talking about how it's not the same and it's not going to work and I'm at the same home environment surrounded by distractions and... my things and codes, and my actual experience was so amazing that here I am in the comfort of our home, practicing and having, 4 days to shin, with many people on the Zoom calls, that that places me to that place where I most familiar at the monastery.
So if I'm tracking, it sounds like when you talk about a place, it's not a physical place. It's a place,
yeah,
we might say, of presence, of being,
mm-hmm,
here, that,
yeah,
going... be possible, wouldn't be the same, and you got to have your own experience of the place of here, the place of presence, is possible, mm-hmm, right where you are.
Yeah, right at home, which was so different from everyday life. one time I stood up from the meditation, and I don't remember what was, like, maybe 4th session in a row. We had a little break, and there it hit me. Wow, I'm having that experience. I'm so here that it feels here. It feels so intense here that is so unusual, while I'm being in a very usual circumstances, and I saw my home with completely new, different eyes.
Sounds like that beginner's mind we talk about in practice, huh? That here you were, here, seeing your home through completely different eyes.
Yeah. It's almost like I had to look around to see if I recognize it. I also had this experience of passing by a large mirror at home, and then it was like struck me as I'm seeing the mirror. You know, not only I can see the reflection in the mirror, but I'm actually seeing the mirror, and it struck me like I'm seeing God. I don't know, it may sound surreal, but I saw somehow God in that mirror of being the mirror, and God is the mirror, as it's so clearly reflecting everything that we often forget and see through it into the, you know, into the content, you know, what's in the reflection, what's in the mirror, passing by, you know, passing by the magic of the mirror.
So you really saw the magic of the mirror instead of passing by it as we might usually do, that you saw not only the reflection, you saw what was reflecting. You saw the mirror and the process of reflection. And that took you to an experience of, this is God reflecting. This is God as the mirror that we usually were so habituated to look for the content, to look for what's being reflected instead of what's reflecting and that process of reflecting.
Yes, exactly. And the next second, everything around me became a reflection. I saw that everything, even not in the mirror, but outside the mirror, is the content that the God is standing and holding the mirror that is reflecting everything this. I don't know how to describe it, but for that brief time, I felt that connection of like, oh wow, we get to have this life, and we get to be here, and be reflected, and be, you know, like we can be lost in the content of our life. But there is magic. There is magic that holds all that content of our lives together as mirror holds the reflection.
There's magic that holds together the content of our lives as the mirror holds together that reflection. So as you turned away from the mirror, you saw everything as a reflection. Not as content, but as a mirror of, sounds like being alive, alive, as you said, receiving the opportunity to be here in human form with all of these things mirroring that aliveness.
Yes, and I hear you saying receiving. That was my experience of giving and receiving and participating. And it's all coming together as one process, as we, talked on the morning show, that process of giving, receiving, participating is is process of a flow of life that is, you know, so connected that, you know, where's I, you know, where's mine, you know, like it's impossible to divide into pieces that flow and try to isolate and break it apart as it's everywhere around and inside of us.
It's everywhere around and inside of us, that flow that it's impossible to break apart and isolate into separate boxes of I, me, mine, and into separate chunks of giving and receiving and participating, that it's all one flow. That was the experience that you went to. That's what you saw.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And thank you for reflecting that as, you know, as I walked by, like, in not even 10 seconds later, the voices start saying, well, that was weird, and that was you just, you know, like, trying to dismiss that experience as it's like kind of invalidate, you know, and it's, and I saw that, oh, okay, hello, ego, you're just trying to grab my attention by, you know, by making such a bizarre claims and dismissing life, that I would drop that magic and go into into debate with you about, you know, and yeah, and I saw the reflection of ego as it was claiming it with nonsense. I saw, oh wow, what a nonsense ego is.
You saw what a nonsense ego is and how powerful to have that clarity about what's what, right? That here you are in the magic, you see the ego voice come in to dismiss and invalidate. And you're able to say, hello, ego, I see you. And realize, why would I drop the magic? Why would I leave the magic to go off into a debate with this imaginary voice?
Yes, and that energy of the retreat is in the body, and it's so like vivid, present, alive, strong, that ego became like such a joke that I almost like can hold it down with my one finger. Just, you know, just kind of like quiet. I see you, quiet. And then, because the whole majesty and grandiose of life is so big that ego, reveals itself as so small that it's not even, it doesn't even have a power.
The ego doesn't even have power. You saw it for the ridiculous comedy that it is in that vastness, that majesty of life. It's like we talk about in practice, right? Ego is that tiny, tiny dot in a vast, infinite universe. And when our attention's on it, it can take up our whole view. And you got to have that experience of it fitting under your little finger. You got to see that tiny dot for what it is from that experience of the majesty of life.
Exactly. Yes, thank you for that. And I have to stop because I can continue for another hour. And thank you so much. I appreciate the Sangha and these calls and these Sunday retreats and such a huge support in such a time. Thank you.
We are so fortunate, huh?
Gasho.
Gasho. We have a few more minutes. Okay, thank you all.
Yes, sure.